Hello and welcome to episode 8 of Glimmer of Genius. My name's Luke and I do YouTube videos for Magic the Gathering. On the line with me is Level 2 Judge Grant David and Cardboard Trader Simon Wright. On the show today, we're going to talk about GP Vegas and the Hour of Devastation spoilers. But before we dive into all of that, Simon, what have you been up to in the world of Magic this last week?
Mainly playing Splinter Twin or Evil Twin. Or anything with twin in it.
Yeah. I'm going to have to give you a solid 2 out of 10 for trying to shoehorn a pun in there related to twins. That was pretty bad.
I thought it was alright.
No, yeah. But as soon as you said Splinter Twin, I was like, well, that's banned. What is he talking about?
This is the new Eternal format. Yeah. It lasts for 20 years until they move out.
Yeah.
I haven't been playing much, obviously. But I did run our Commander tournament on the weekend, and it was the biggest one we've had to date, which is great. I think we had 20 people playing almost all day, firing loads of pods of four.
Wow.
I managed to get gaming, and I won with an infinite combo. Checking back on it, though, it might not have been legal. but, you know, I've got away with it.
Evidently. Excellent.
So that's literally all I played for the last couple of weeks, really. It's flown by. I've missed a lot of what's been happening.
What was the combo?
Oh, I can't. It involved 3 or 4 different cards. I can't remember the name of half of them. But I'm pretty sure it didn't work because it relied on Relentless Dead and Grave Titan, and Grave Titan's not a zombie.
Right. So it definitely wasn't. Oh, Simon.
Yeah, I had Phyrexian Altar on the board, and the Brave Pact, when you sacrifice a creature, everyone else has to sacrifice a creature.
Oh, yeah.
And another zombie on the board, whenever a zombie dies, all my opponents lose one. It's like a 4 or 5 janky combo. I think I could still have got it to work a different way around anyway.
Nice.
Yes. If you can't win, cheat.
I do not support this method.
Well, I suppose we can let you off playing, because for those that don't know, you had 2 twins.
Human babies.
One set of twins. Two twins would be 4.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to... I was just thinking that. Is that the wrong way of saying it, actually? That's why I sort of hesitated there. Maths was never my strong point.
Just
well done.
Twins.
Well done, mate. But no, congratulations on that. You were missed last week.
Yeah, I know. I listened to the podcast.
Ow.
No, it's good. Well done.
Thanks. And well done, you.
I'm gutted I missed it. There was a lot of announcements. I had lots to say, but I wasn't sleeping. That was what was it you were discussing? You were discussing about, I can't remember, I think it was Brian saying that you could put like Piffin Needle just into it was easy to reprint in any set.
Yeah,
but then you've got other that was what I picked up on. Yeah, you'd have other cards that normally in core sets, like, I don't know, a Doomblade or something, just general cards you'd need in any set, and all of a sudden every special set, like expert set, would need to have all these core set cards in. I mean, you can fit them in easily, but it means all that design, a lot of design space is then taken up by core cards, which would be crap.
Yeah, true. I mean, it depends how many, because like there's always going to be different ways of printing like artifacts and creature removal to make it favor of the set. But in terms of like specific planeswalker artifact hate, that's kind of difficult to repeat, or Pivot Needle kind of fits that slot with you really nicely.
Yeah, and you don't need a giant spider in a set. Core set or otherwise, you don't have to have a giant spider in there, Luke.
Just an example. I don't like giant spider. I'm as a someone who likes to play burn, anything with more than 3 toughness, I resent. So, you know, that's fine. I've never reprinted giant spider. It's OP.
It is a good card.
Okay, Grant, what have you been up to in Magic?
Not that much, really. Obviously, we had the shake-up of Standard with Etherworks and stuff being banned, so I kind of stopped playing Standard in terms of I'm just going to let it settle to kind of detach myself from that. So it meant that I've sort of been playing half as much at least, because obviously that means half the events I would normally go to. Well, I played some Modern last Friday, the deck I think I talked about last time, the Planeswalker one with Blood Moon and Doubling Season. 4 copies of Blood Moon. It runs Oath of Nissa so that it doesn't mess up your own land base, because then you can tap your mountains for whatever colour you want for your Planeswalkers. Yeah. It runs 18 Planeswalkers and Doubling Season for it to be silly.
So is that a Modern deck?
That is a Modern deck, yeah. It runs Nahiri, which obviously searches up Emrakul, It runs stuff like the Ajani from the new from the latest set, which puts counters on stuff. It runs three of the Voice of Zendikar to make loads of blockers and just put counters on stuff. And then it has like a playset of Sylvan Caryatids, Birds, Noble Hierarchs, that sort of thing. It consistently does like turn two Blood Moon and just messes most modern decks up, so it's good fun.
Well, you just get to keep playing your Planeswalkers.
I like it.
Yeah, because both of Nissa says Reds is, or whatever is, whatever. The only thing it lost to, because it was four rounds, the only thing it ever lost to was Storm, because, well, it's Storm. You either, you just sit there for 10 minutes and decide if you, and the opponent decides if they can win the game or not, so. but yeah, so I'm pretty happy with that. That's it for me for Magic at the moment. I'm not sure if I want to sort of get back into Standard for the new set, depending on what Standard settles like. I don't know if you guys can tell me, as of Etherworks being banned, if you think it's going to be healthier or if you think the new set's going to make it healthier. But at the moment, I think I'm going to stick to Modern for maybe like a month or something.
Yeah, well, it'll definitely be healthier. Monday Night Magic last night was Standard and it only had six players, which is the lowest it's been for a long time. There's a lot of people sitting back and just waiting to see how the dust settles before they decide to pick up their next deck.
Yeah, same.
And with our devastations around the corner, you might as well just wait.
Yeah, I think you get a bit of a lull near the end of a season anyway, because people have this kind of mindset, like you said, where you just think, oh, it's all going to change anyway, so I'm not going to invest my energy into this right now, which makes sense. And especially after the back, you know, off the back of that recent banning, then there's even less incentive. I think the format is definitely a lot healthier. Team of Monsters is a real deck still. It just gets better because obviously Marvel doesn't exist. Glorybringer is a very real problem. If you don't have an answer to Glorybringer in new standards, then you need to really think about what your deck is doing in order to actually compete, because that card is just brutal. And Green-Black Delirium and Green-Black Aggro, again, very prominent. They can just do silly things, whether it's just flood the board with creatures quickly or Delirium counters thing, Verdurous Gearhulk, that sort of stuff. It's just all very, very powerful. And Zombies is floating around in the background as well. For me, though, for Magic, I went to a PPTQ in London, not last weekend, the weekend before, and I did reasonably well. I didn't make top eight. It was a bit frustrating. I basically lost my winning in to a poor Mulligan decision and then a very bad misplay in the third game that we played. It was really frustrating because my opponent that I was playing sat down and he was visibly shaking at the thought of being on the feature match. And seeing him as a bag of nerves immediately just made me think, oh, I've just been so cool and collected and it's just going to unnerve him even more. And I was just so blasé about everything. He said, oh, we've got playmats. They put these playmats down. It was like black playmats and had a little webcam over the top of us.
Where was this?
This was Dark Sphere, London.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And yes, they have this like double-sided playmat already kind of there. He was like, oh, we've already got playmats. And I was like, oh, yeah. So then I threw down my Games Day champion playmat and said, I'm going to use my playmat anyway. And I thought that was psych him out. And he's like, oh, you don't need the playmats. I said, no, that's fine. I like my playmat. And then I had to have then the judge came over and said, can you move your playmat, please? Because they've got the black ones. I was like, okay.
Yeah. I go, no, I'm a champion.
Yeah.
Put it across your waist instead.
Yeah. Oh, I should have done. Wasted opportunity. It was really interesting. I was basically running Black-White Zombies, and it was the final day that we could play with Aetherworks Marvel. And I only played it once, and my deck did everything I wanted to do against that matchup. I just rushed him in the first game. And the second game, I managed to curve out Dispossess, removing Aetherworks Marvel into Gideon, and then another Gideon. So that was pretty sweet. But no, in the winning in that I lost, it was Team of Monsters, and I lost to a Glorybringer. So I had this ridiculous thought process where I'm not sure, it's weird because I keep looking back thinking it was a play mistake, but then other times I think, oh, I don't know. So basically, my opponent had two mana. And they on turn two, they cast Servant of the Conduit, which is the 2-mana 2/2, which makes energy, and then you can spend an energy to make mana of any colour. I have some amount of zombies, and then on their third turn, they play a second Servant of the Conduit. I was thinking, right, they don't play a third land, and they say go. I've got Grasp of Darkness in hand, and I think to myself, if I just grasp this Servant of the Conduit, and there's nothing they can really do. Obviously, I'm fearful of turn four Glorybringer at this point. That's what I'm worried about. So I fire off Grasp of Darkness and then play a zombie and then pass back and then they untap and they go They top deck Attune the Aether.
Yeah.
And cast Chandra, and then off of the Chandra cast Glorybringer.
Yeah. It was a chance you had to take, I think. You could either be risky and it would pay off, or you play it safe and the same thing happens. So it's I don't know. I think a more professional player would probably give you like a more solid answer, but I think from my point of view, you took a chance to get an edge and it didn't really backfire. It just had it didn't really do what you expected it to do. Because the same thing would have happened whether you did that or not. Obviously, you would have been able to kill the Glorybringer, but then...
It was really tough because the combination of Chandra and Glorybringer would really hurt. Whereas it would have been nice to be able to kill the Glorybringer and then not lose a creature and then have more chance of killing the Chandra. Because it was just so awkward because he was able to just go, right, Chandra kills a thing, Glorybringer kills a thing. And I was just like, oh my God, this game's just over. But yeah, no, it was interesting. Very interesting. I also, another weird thing as well is it's really annoying how much Baral's expertise just like throws games just completely against you. Like they just play like an arbitrary amount of dudes and then they go Baral's expertise and just like return three things you control back and get another spell. Yeah. That card's pretty insane.
So that was the blue one.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a lovely card. That was.
Yeah. There was also an amusing moment as well in the second game. Against this guy because he was getting a bit nervous and that. As I say, he was like, oh, I've never been on camera before. And so he's visibly shaking at one point. I was like, okay.
It's all a ruse.
Yeah, well, no, I don't think it was because at one point I was like, well, I need to tap out to cast this Liliana's Mastery because I just literally had nothing else. I was like, I'm going to cast it. If he's got a negate, he's got a negate. And I cast it and he goes, okay. And I said, resolves. And he went, yes. I went, cool. And I pick up two zombie tokens. And he goes, wait, response? And I went, what? and I said, are you responding to the zombie tokens coming? And he goes, no, responding to the Liliana's Mastery. And I said, well, the Liliana's Mastery is into the battlefield now. He was like, no, it hasn't. I was like, I'm pretty sure it has. And he went, no. I went, no. And he was like, oh, okay. And then later on, he realized that he did have a negate. But he was like... He just, for some reason, just said, yeah, that resolves. He was just like, not with it. And afterwards, he was like, oh, yeah, no, I made so many mistakes. I was like, yeah, well, you know, you still won. So, well done, you.
So, don't talk to me.
Yeah. Don't want to hear that now. But he was like, yeah. he was genuinely nervous. I've never encountered anyone that's been that nervous. I've always either just been nervous or encounter people that are not nervous. So
I still get a bit nervous. The rare occasion I do enter a tournament, if I'm doing well, I'm at the top tables, I still get a bit nervous. Even if it's just maybe not a games day, but if it's a local PPTQ, I still get a bit nervous.
I do say it quite a lot, actually. And again, like you said, I think if you can stay cool, I think you can take advantage of that situation from obviously a competitive point of view, not from a sort of sketchy point of view. But, you know, staying calm and stuff gives you quite a strong advantage.
Yeah. It was a shame that I wasn't able to kind of make it really work to my favour. Obviously, the Liliana's Mastery play was worked out for me, and that was good. But there was like a point in one of the other games as well where he Magma Sprayed a 3-3, and I just went, okay. And he did it in such a way where in his mind it was so clear he thought that token was going to die.
Yeah.
And as soon as I said okay, he was just like, his head just went down. And I was like, yeah, like this, he needs to kind of like shake this off and get back in. And he did, so it worked out for him in the end. But yeah, it's just really interesting to observe. That was my week. I mean, overall, I had a positive record in the end. The frustrating thing for me was I drew two games, which was really annoying. And one of the rounds I shouldn't have even drew. I should have won, but I missed something and I should have called a judge. But I thought the rules worked in a certain way and they don't, so it's my own fault. But that was a bit annoying.
Always call the judge.
Yeah. Yep. Bit of a learning experience, really. I wasn't overly disappointed with the experience as a whole.
As long as you've learned from your mistakes for next time.
Yes, always learn. See, yes. At least I can say I make new mistakes as opposed to making the same ones.
Yes.
And after the last PPTQ, I was actually pile shuffling my deck between rounds and counting it, making sure I de-sideboarded and stuff. So
good.
That's good. Didn't play with 59 cards anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so the next thing we want to talk about then is GP Vegas. Not going to spend masses of time on GP Vegas, other than to say it was, as far as GPs goes, it's one of the more popular ones in America land, and a lot of people really sort of love it, and the vibe was really, really good. I was a bit gutted that couldn't really go. I think there's a special mention of a local player, Chloe Beadle.
Yeah.
She went, was it 9-0 on day one?
Wow.
Yeah, 9-0
day one.
That's the only bit I saw of GP Vegas was Chloe's Facebook status updates of 9-0 in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite an achievement. What's the format? Modern?
Modern, yeah. And yeah, she was piloting Abzan mid-range, so all the top sort of like, you know, Abzan-y cards. Lingering Souls, yes, that one. From what little I know about that deck, Lingering Souls seems to be one of the main draws to play that, because it is pretty good.
It's just pure value, that's what the deck's about.
Yeah, and she did very well with that. I think she ended up, I'm going to get this wrong now, like 11-4 or something in the end.
Yeah, day two did not go as well. No. But if you saw the other players at 9-0, I can't remember who they were, but I saw Owen Turtle was up there. There's a couple of other pro players up there. It was a tough tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. So, no, I mean, I would have just been pretty excited just to be playing amongst that calibre of people, even to then not do so well on the second day. Like, it's just amazing. So, yeah, she did very well.
I haven't checked who she played against during the tour. I don't know if she actually came across any pros, but I'm assuming she would have done. She 9-0'd the first day.
I would have thought so. I mean, it might be that she's playing people that are like perhaps silver or gold level pros, but not necessarily pros that you would know the name of.
Yeah, well done, Chloe.
And just very briefly then, the top eight lists for the event overall. There was a mono white Hate Bears deck, 3 affinity lists, 1 Eldrazi Tron, 1 Nia Burn, and 1 green-white Hate Bears, and a blue-black Taking Turns deck. So Burn is pretty much what you'd expect from a Burn list. The only thing that is worth noting in that, which may or may not be of interest to people that play Burn, is this list seemed to be more leaning on red-white in the main deck, and 1 Stomping Ground only for destructive rivalries post-board, which is quite cool. Makes the mana base a lot smoother, makes you a lot less weak to Blood Moons, and Destructive Revelry is really one of the few cards that you want to actually have in green. So not playing a Tarka's Command, instead just playing 4 Skullcrack. So that's just a slight little Ooh. Thing you're starting to see more of. So yeah, but you know, the reality is they're only playing 12 creatures, so a Tarka's Command not necessarily is literally just there to stop people gaining life, and you get that with Skullcrack. So
What creatures is it missing? What does it normally play?
Well, I think they've been this creature base for a while. But what I mean by that is, so you've got the 4 Goblin Guide, 4 Monastery Swift Spear, and 4 Eidolon of the Great Revel. So yeah, you could easily play your Tarka's Command. But I'm thinking like Death Shadow, for example. They Fatal Push your creature, they Terminate your creature, and then you've got a Tarka's Command sitting in hand. They don't really gain any life anyway. So a Tarka's Command isn't necessarily going to be interacting with your opponent's cards against something like Death Shadow.
Yes.
It's good against something like Abzan or a deck that wants to gain life, or even in the mirror if they're bringing in Core Firewalker, but then you only stop them gaining the 1 life, and they still gain the life off of your casting of the Tarka's Command in the first place. So I just think it's the way perhaps the games have shifted slightly. And even Eldrazi Tron, or Eldertron, whatever you want to call it, which was also in the top 8, they don't.
Hang on, let's go back to Nia Burn.
Yeah.
I don't see any harsh mentors in that list, Luke.
No, I've cut them all together. Yeah, I freely admit, when I jammed 2 of them in there to start with, just to kind of force data on it, really, to say, is this good against the field that I want it to be? And the answer is no. So I'm happy to cut it. I'm much more of the opinion that I want to play a card and actually find out, rather than just people say, oh, it might or might not be good.
Yeah, I agree.
And the thing is, people have always said, oh, it'd be great to bring in against something like Affinity, and I just think you want 4 Destructive Revelries. It's just not great. Affinity, playtesting that recently the other day, it's just got so many lines and things it's doing, like it's very difficult to target it, so just having ways to kill their artifacts is generally what you want to be doing. But yeah, no, I was going to say about Eldratron was that also doesn't really gain a massive amount of life. It's got 1 Basilisk Collar, and not any other way of gaining life. So the skull, you know, the extra Skullcrack effect in a Tarka's Command is just not really necessarily very good against some of the bigger decks that are kind of going to be there in the format at the moment. And the Eldrazi Tron list itself, Karns, Endbringers, Reality Smashers, Walking Ballistas, Ulamogs, all that sort of goodness. And if you hadn't noticed it already, the Basilisk Collar and Endbringer combo, or just the Basilisk Collar and Walking Ballista combo, is great. So pinging stuff with Death Touch, basically, to just like wipe out your opponent's creatures is quite funny. And then you've got the Affinity, which I don't really need to go over. They're pretty much variations on the same sort of deck. And then Mono White Hate Bears and Green White Hate Bears, which is irritating 2-mana 2/2s and other types of creatures which stop you from searching your library, make your spells cost more, and the Pithing Needle on a Stick in the form of Phyrexian Revoker, that sort of thing.
I've seen a lot more Hate Bears recently. It was a deck that I saw and heard was a thing like years ago, and then saw a bit of it about 2 or 3 years ago. But as of the last sort of 2 or 3 months, I've seen a lot more, particularly the lists that run Abrasi Displacer and all that sort of business.
Yeah.
So I don't know why that's coming back into favour, but it seems to be quite popular now.
Absolutely. I think, you know, turn one Overvile and then stuff. You can just swamp the board.
Because I got my Overviles from my first modern deck, which was Tribal Knights, which was fun. And depending on the meta, particularly if it's very heavy aggro, it's sometimes something I'd sometimes bring back because it's quite interesting to see what players think of it. But given that I've got a playset of Aether Vials, it's kind of one of the decks I could go into.
Yep.
But again, I'm not really sure if this is true. But I think because it's a pure anti-meta deck in a way,
yep,
I feel like the skill level is quite high and you need to know exactly what the opponent's doing to actually be successful with it, which I think I'd be very poor at, particularly if I have like a little break for a bit.
Mm. Yeah, I do take your point, actually. I think you got to kind of know what you're doing with it.
So just randomly as well, I'm just going through a stack of cards that I need to sort through. I just found a Living End in one of my old decks from about 8 years ago.
Yay!
Oh, you've been looking for those.
No, that's my fourth one, so that's perfect. But, well, not quite the six forcibles you found, Simon. But
I was going to say, yeah, I was sorting through cards today.
So, when you say you're going through bulk, do you mean you just buy loads of cards people haven't been through and go through them? Or?
This wasn't exact. So, last week I was going through actual bulk. So this was from a collection I bought probably years ago. I can't remember what collection it came from. And it was part of a box of cards. I thought, looking through it, probably nothing good in there. Put it away for now.
Sure.
More important stuff to do. And I'll reach it back to it. I found a Forcible in there, an Alliance one. I've recently picked up a collection and they handed it over to me. They did say they picked through a lot of it already, but they thought there might be some more good stuff in there. And I just hit a wad of Forcibles. It wasn't bulk. It was stuff that I needed to go through and sort. But yeah, it was a bit of a shock to find them in there.
Pretty good.
Yeah, so that made my day. There was also some Worldly Tutors, Enlightened Tutors, Helm of Obedience?
Oh yeah, the one with Legacy, yeah. Oh, speaking of Legacy, actually, one of the guys locally wanted to run a proxy Legacy event, and then Dice Loom wanted to, and then there was obviously a bit about because it's proxy, they can't do prize support for it and all that sort of business.
Yeah.
But just locally, that's quite an interesting event to do Legacy, because UK is terrible to play Legacy. I think the only place that I've ever heard it being played is up north and sometimes Darksphere. And you really have to have like the community support for people to lend decks, and obviously there's a lot of money and all that sort of business. So yeah, it's just a really good idea locally that we're going to trial some proxy Legacy events in Brighton just to have a go.
I'm not too sure what's going on with it. I mean, I know the main idea was to have it that you could have a fully proxy deck to start with, but it had to be good proxies. It couldn't just be bits of paper written on the back of a magic card. It had to be like, you know, it looked like what it should be. And as the months went on, the number of proxies you could have would reduce to try and get to slowly build it. But I think you'd still be allowed to have a certain number in any given time anyway, just because, you know, so you could avoid purchasing the really big ones. And the local shop heard of the idea and they liked it and they wanted to run with it. I think the concept was just directly, and of course they are anti-proxy,
yeah,
to the sort of thing where it's like if they find out the shop's running proxy, they're not very happy about it in the first place. And our shop spent a long time, you know, trying to build up their WPN status, whatever it is, building a good relationship with Wizards. They didn't want to do anything to jeopardize that. But if you can do it without just not doing it as a sanctioned event, then that's an option, I believe. But yeah, not my decision to make that one. But yeah, there was enough players interested. More formats, the better, really.
Yeah.
We've got some youngins in the store that love playing a bit of Legacy with their proxy. Yeah,
really random.
The guy walked up to me and said, "Do you want to play Legacy?" And I just started not expecting him to come out with that.
Like, yeah. I didn't leave my home because I don't have a Legacy deck. I'm not made of money. Are you? He's like, "No, this is not like a bit of paper with a C written on it. That's a counter spell." Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're good at it as well. They're good.
Yeah.
Before we moved on, did we discuss this blue-black taking turns deck?
That was the next. No, that was the final deck in the top eight. Yeah.
Because I was just looking at how do you win?
How does it win?
It wins. You see that Snapcaster Mage?
Yeah.
Yeah, it hits you with that 10 times.
Oh, okay. Just take 10 extra turns in a row and win.
Yeah. It wins with that part of the Water Veil and the tears of your enemies.
That's how it wins. Better ways to win the game if you've got access to 9 mana.
Yeah, but I think this person wants to troll people. I don't know. The thing about this deck is it's not a fun strategy or even necessarily a reliable one. I mean, it must have been somewhat reliable because it top 8 of this GP, but it just gets to a point where even if your opponent is doing really well, you just go, oh, you're locked out of the game now because you're never going to get another turn.
It runs a playset. The only playset it runs, apart from Serum Visions and Time Walk and Dictator Crucifix, it runs a playset of Giga Drowse. Remember that card? Yes. No,
tap target permanent. Yeah, I mean, I think it's really good. It's nice to see a new deck up there. Yeah, it probably doesn't look like it's horrible to play against, but I find that against most modern decks.
It's either this or Storm. What would you rather lose to?
Or Grant is Blood Moon and Planeswalkers. Yeah. You can't play anything. I get to play all these cool Planeswalkers.
Yeah, it's good fun.
Yeah. That's similar to this deck. You can't play anything, I take all the extra turns.
This is the thing, because that just locks you out of the game. And, you know, you play some stuff and you kill them, that's fine. The problem with Storm is that they'll play, but they'll take ages thinking about it because, admittedly, they have to. But you can't interact with any point of that. And they just take so long on their turns. It's not like they're just chaining stuff. It's that they're chaining stuff taking so long and you can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
That's just when you go off for your lunch break, isn't it? And then come back.
What you should do is the other thing that I've just remembered that my opponent did in that PPTQ, which is when you're about to do something or when they're about to do something, ask them a question. So like, oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Just start talking about the flavor text on their cards and stuff. Like when they're counting up their Storm.
What's your favorite color?
But no, on a serious note, I swear he did this on purpose, right? I resolved a Diagraph Colossus, one on the table already, and I cast a random zombie, and I moved to pick up a zombie token, and he said...
You look very nice today.
No, well, he said something like, I was just cast or enter. I went, nice cast. And then he said, he immediately followed it up with another question about the zombie, and I was like, no, it's quite good. And he said, oh, it's quite a good card, isn't it? And I was underrated it for, you know, that sort of thing.
What's his name?
Yeah. And then I stopped, and then I was like, what was I doing? I was like, oh yeah, a zombie. And then I thought, did he do that on purpose? Did he try to like get me to forget to put a zombie down? Because that was really sneaky. Maybe he didn't, but that's just kind of what made me think he did. But yeah, it's a legitimate tactic against Storm. Just talk to them throughout the entirety of them trying to work out, like, do I metamorphose here? Do I do this? Could you get a warning for that, Grant? If say someone was literally trying to combo off and I was just like asking them questions, like how many cards you got in your hand?
I guess it depends on the question.
I mean, if he's asking questions within the game, like, is this a cast trigger? I think you wouldn't be able to really do anything. But if he's just shouting random questions at you, that's a bit more, you just go, like, stop being annoying. But if he's asking legitimate questions, then I don't know, that's kind of, it's a very weird grey area that I don't think anyone's going to come across. But
how's your mum doing? Judge.
It's all about my mum. I don't know, yeah. It's an interesting one. I like that.
Fair enough. That's one to save. I'm going to a modern event this weekend. I'll try that out, see how it goes. I'll let you know if I get DQ.
Oh, glad I'm not going.
You don't play Magic.
That's true.
That was the GP, the decks in the GP. Please don't put together blue-black taking turns. You won't be thanked for it. So we'll be moving on now to some Hour of Devastation spoilers. Right, so unless you've been living under a rock for the last few months, you would have seen some Hour of Devastation spoilers that have been released. We're not going to go through every last card, but we are going to talk about some of the key things, some of the standout cards, the mechanics, that sort of thing. So, Grant, do you want to kick us off with the mechanics and things that we can look forward to in Hour of Devastation?
So, in terms of like named mechanics, I believe we've only got two. We've got Afflict and we've got what's it called? Eternalize, is it?
Yep.
Exert as well, but that's...
Yeah, got the return of Exert as well. Yeah. But in terms of new mechanics, you've got Eternalize and you've got Afflict. So Afflict, it was used in like a few Rakdos color cards or black color cards that do this sort of thing, sort of, but they turn it into a proper word, which is afflict and then a number. Whenever this creature becomes blocked, the defending player loses that much life, and then generally the cards will have stuff that affect when they block or if they don't block, so they'll sort of lose either way, as it were. So that's quite cool.
So if they get blocked by more than one creature, does the afflict happen twice?
I believe it's the wording so that it just says when it becomes blocked. If it's for something that triggers multiple times, if it gets blocked multiple times, it says whenever this creature becomes blocked by a creature.
Okay.
And whenever this creature becomes blocked, I believe it only ever triggers once. That's the way they word it, if it's going to be different. In terms of Eternalize, as far as I'm aware, it's the same as Embalm, but always makes a 4/4, always black, and always a token with the same stuff going on.
Can you call it a new mechanic? It's just a Embalm, apart from the creature becomes a 4/4 black zombie token.
It's Embalm 2.0.
I don't know what it's interesting, because most of the Eternalize creatures are quite small.
Yeah, that's the whole point, that they then become bigger and become 4/4s.
Crazy stuff, yeah, which is quite cool. In terms of kind of like soft mechanics, you've got three gods, where rather than being indestructible, and they either return back to hand, which I think is actually better, in my opinion. Quite like that. There's the cycle of planeswalker defeats, which I think are really cool flavor-wise and picture-wise. And there was another one that I was going to talk about, but I can't remember what it was. Oh, there's a lot more to do with deserts, which is what I was kind of disappointed about in the first set, so that's quite cool.
I wanted to mention about the new exert. Some creatures now have exert abilities that you don't have to attack with them.
Pride Salt Britain, my favourite card from this set.
Which one?
It gets +1/+1 for each cat you control. Exert it, make two cats.
Oh, yes, very good. Yeah, I thought that was quite good. I like the exert mechanic, but what made it awkward was you had to attack to trigger it.
Indeed, yeah.
I mean, it was bad enough that sometimes, you know, your creature doing it untapped, but having it to have to attack at the same time made it quite tricky.
Yeah.
So I like that they put it in on other creatures. But yeah, I thought the mechanics were just really, apart from Afflict, they're pretty much the same as Amonkhet. So I found that a bit disappointing.
I don't know, with most sets now, I don't know if they're going to change it with the new stuff. It tends to be, you've got some of the old mechanics and they generally only add like one or two. Like if you look at Theros, was quite a good example. Like
it's true.
Charm and Focus, but then they just add in like Bestow or whatever. So I think it's good. It keeps it, you know, simple. Like it's got a few tweaks, like you said about Exert or the gods or whatever. So I think it's fine.
Yeah, maybe that's why, you know, they've decided they don't have to stick on one plane the whole time.
Yeah, it's nice.
You know, it's only going to be one set at a time in that announcement they made. You know, because I guess it does get a bit samey. Yeah. I mean, you can make little tweaks to it.
Cycling's back, obviously, as well. Love that one.
Yeah.
Not as much in this set, though, is it?
No, but I think from the first set, it's just to add some more stuff to it, I guess. There's some really interesting stuff, though, like the, is it Hollow 1 or Empty? Oh, no, Hollow 1, yeah. The 5-mana colourless 4/4, you can cycle it for 2, but it costs 2 colourless less for each card you cycled this turn.
Yes, I saw that this morning.
You cast it, like, super early with some shenanigans, like, because I think the Union, which is just interesting. So, yeah, there's a few, not necessarily lots of cycling cards, but there's a few ones that might push some cycling decks over the edge, which is quite cool.
I couldn't quite judge its power level, so I had nothing to really compare it to.
Just from a weird point of view, I really like the coloured deserts, the ones that don't come into play tap, they count as deserts. They give you colourless and you can pay one life to give you coloured, and they do like an extra thing. Not so much from the extra thing point of view, because generally those kind of uncommon lands that do stuff are bad. But I think it's the first sort of uncommon lands we've seen in a while that don't come into play tapped. And from that point of view, I think they'd be really useful for, obviously not for very long, but stuff like Eldrazi and stuff that needs colourless sources.
Yeah.
I think it's just nice to see some lands that don't just give you coloured and don't come play tapped.
What about, it's not a worded mechanic, but it's this new cycle of Bontu's Last Reckoning. You get something cheap, but your lands don't untap during your next untap step.
Yeah, that's quite cool. The Oketra's Last Mercy, I think, is going to be super good in any kind of control deck. I don't play control, but just 3 mana, go back to your life total. That seems crazy.
That's the white one, isn't it?
Yeah, 3 mana. Oh, Solemnity is interesting as well. The players can't get counters, counters can't be put in anything else either. In modern as well, obviously it breaks infect, but it's a bit too slow. But there's some really interesting stuff you could do with that, like around Persist and Undying and some other nonsense with counters, because that's such a broad card.
Going back to the cycle, the ones that the lands don't untap, do you think, because I know mana dorks have become weaker recently, but do you think this makes them better again?
What makes mana dorks better?
Yeah, this cycle of the Bontu's Last Reckoning and Last Mercy.
Yeah, possible. The one that starts as a 0/1, but then works up to a 3/4 mana dork. I quite like her. So I really like that amount of torque. I wouldn't mind building around that. So yeah, I guess if these cards are being run quite a lot, then maybe. But of course, like Bontu's Last Reckoning doesn't have a torque. No. So maybe only a few of them.
I know, Luke, you were quite hot on Bontu's Last Reckoning, weren't you?
Yeah, I think that card's amazing. And
good. It's good.
Yeah, I think it's going to see play in Standard quite easily.
It's interesting because the control, obviously the Catcher's Last Mercy, the gaining life thing, obviously effectively you have a turn out where the opponent can then hit you again. But with Bontu's Last Reckoning, sure your stuff doesn't untap, but because your opponent's going to take a turn to rebuild anyway, it doesn't matter too much, does it? So that's, I think, a better in that sense, maybe.
Yes.
I guess not. Yeah, but don't you usually spend the turn you've left the board building your board up yourself as well?
Yeah, true. It depends what you do, I guess. Yeah.
Or keeping your control, or keeping your counter mana open.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
The thing with it is, though, you don't necessarily want to always cast it on turn three, but you've got it on turn three as a safety valve if you're getting your head staved in.
Indeed, yeah.
Also, if you're playing a deck which has counter magic as a support role in your control deck, especially in black, you've got ways to kill things like planeswalkers. So you could Wrath, they could play a planeswalker. Yeah, they'll get an activation out of it, but you've still got a way of dealing with it in lots of other cards.
Right.
But also, it scales up quite well because you don't have to. Imagine casting this on turn six.
Yeah, so say you play it on turn six, you've got six mana up,
yeah.
You Wrath the board, and you've got counter mana kept up. Goes to their turn, they cast a spell, you use your counter mana, comes to your turn, you don't untap any of your lands. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
To me, it doesn't seem like it does scale well. Mm. Unless you get, you know, a lot of mana.
Just from a rules perspective, unless it gets FAQ'd, any lands you play after the spell's resolved won't get bound by this. So if you went turn five, say turn four, you play Bontu's Last Reckoning, then played your land for turn, that fourth one would still untap next turn.
Okay. Oh, that's a bloody pain to keep track of, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's something people might miss. Again, it might be FAQ, but if everything's the same, that should be how it works.
Yeah. So I'm still a bit on the fence of it. I think that your lands don't untap is a lot bigger drawback than people are giving it credit for.
It depends what you do, though, because if you go quite planeswalker heavy, so say if you went with, like, I don't know, Obnixilus or something, you can wipe the board, and if they rebuild, you just use other sources that didn't get wiped or didn't get affected by it, like planeswalkers or artifacts or enchantments or something.
Yeah.
So it depends how you play it.
It could be one of those things that is just, it's just too harsh. I don't know. I mean, unless you're playing, like, something that's hyper-aggressive, I don't know that you get overly punished for it.
No, I think it's...
It will be played. I just don't think it's going to be as breaking as people are thinking it will be.
No, that's fair enough. I mean, it doesn't feel good if you Bontu's Last Reckoning and they cast Glorybringer. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
That would be rubbish. Grant, you mentioned the gods briefly there. Simon, talk us through the gods.
Oh, yeah, that's more of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so as granted, there's three new gods. They're not indestructible, they do return to your hand. But also, unlike any of the other gods previously, they're always creatures. There's no device you need to reach or something you need to trigger to make them become creatures.
But then they are more expensive.
Yeah, as long as they're on the battlefield, they are creatures. I guess I should start with the best. No, I'm not going to start the best one. I'm just going to start with my favourite one, which is obviously the Scarab God. Three colourless, blue, black. 5/5 legendary god. At the beginning of your upkeep, each opponent loses X life and you scry X, where X is the number of zombies you control.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. And it's not, doesn't even finish there. It's also got ability, two colourless, one blue, one black. Exile target creature card from a graveyard, any graveyard, create a token that's a copy of it, except it's a 4/4 black zombie.
See, that's really good, even if you're not doing zombie tribal.
Yeah.
I really like that. You can probably abuse that horribly.
That's going straight into my zombie command deck. it's awesome. The one people are most excited about is the Locust God.
Super good.
Four colourless, blue, red. It's flying. Whenever you draw a card, create a 1/1 blue and red insect creature token with flying and haste. Oh, do you know it has haste as well? That's pretty cool.
Yes.
And its second ability is two colourless, one blue, one red, draw a card, then discard a card. 4/4. Now, a lot of people are raving about this one, because I'm mainly focused on the Scarab God. There's lots of good things you can do about it. What I was looking at, it was what about if you played it with Kefnet, and yeah. You use Kefnet's drawability instead of his drawability.
Nice.
So you can still make your 1/1s, but then also get your hand up to 7 cards to get Kefnet active as well.
Mm.
I think the only opinion I've got about it is Well, one that is very, very good, but I think the only thing I've got about it at the moment is it's a 4-4 and dies to Grasp of Darkness. So I think it's going to be one of those cards which is going to get played because it's very good. But I think the moment Battle for Zendikar rotates out, it's going to... A bit like Keranos, God of Storms, he had like a random surge when it was meta-relevant in Modern, I think it was. So I think Guy will, unless, again, the new sets are crazy or whatever, I reckon this guy will see play but then have a massive hype when Battle rotates out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that happening, yeah. I like that. Standard dies to Grasp of Darkness, Modern dies to Lightning Bolt.
Basically, yeah.
And the Scorpion God, which is 3 colours, 1 black, 1 red. He has a 6/5. Whenever a creature with a -1 counter on it dies, draw a card. And his ability is 1 colours, 1 red, 1 black. Puts a -1 counter on another target creature. Definitely the weakest of the three, I'd say. Usually I'd say his abilities are quite good. However, they just printed 2 cards that sort of nerf his abilities, really. You've got the White Vizier and the new... What was it you just mentioned, Grant? Yeah, which doesn't let you put counters on anything anyway, so dies to hate cards, unfortunately.
I think it'd be interesting to run in a deck where you're doing, say, Jund, and you've got a few creatures with -1/-1 counters on it yourself.
Yeah.
And just, you know, attack with, say, 2 of those, the 2-mana 4-4 guys, draw 2 cards, they get stronger, that's quite nice.
Well, when you're playing with Persist guys, maybe. Actually, no, we've got a lot of -1 counters in Amonkhet, haven't we?
Yeah, just like, you know, the either the Mana Dork guy or the 2-mana 4/4 when it attacks, you take a counter off. I just like the idea of just having this guy down, attacking with the little guys, attacking with the mana, and just drawing like 2 or 3 extra bonus cards. And if you want to use the -1/-1 thing as well as some removal because you've got spare mana, that's quite cool.
It's odd that they're only doing the grits. It's kind of, I know what they're doing it for flavor wise, you know, nickel bonus. Yes, they're only doing 3. And in the certain colours, you'd think that would pull people into certain deck builds going forward.
Yeah.
For those that don't know the story, Amonkhet had 8 gods, and Nicol Balas turned up, like basically mind wiped the other 5 and then put the other 3 in stasis. So when he comes back, that's why there's 3. And on like the Amonkhet monuments, like that you're not allowed to go into, they noticed that there's always 8 gods depicted rather than 5, and that's why Samma was all like suspicious, and obviously that's why she got turned into a planeswalker, because she found out the truth.
I don't have time to read the book. I tried to, every now and again I see the article, or the little story article, they're so wordy.
Those books with their words,
those letters. But yeah, so talking about the planeswalkers.
Yes, excellent.
Luke, you want to take over that?
Excellent segue into Samma the Tested. So this is a 4-mana planeswalker, 2 generic, 1 red, 1 green, started with 4 loyalty, and the +1 ability is up to 1 target creature gains double strike until end of turn. It doesn't have to be a creature you control. And -2 is Samma the Tested deals 2 damage divided as you choose among 1 or 2 target creatures and or players, which is pretty cool. And -7, search your library for up to 2 creature cards and or planeswalker cards and put them onto the battlefield and shuffle your library. So this is interesting. The plus ability is pretty good in an aggressive deck. It does defend us off a little bit, but the 2 damage is quite limiting. So I'm not too sure how much play this will actually see. I mean, there's the obvious kind of, you can -7 it for Emrakul in Modern, but...
That's the thing, you say that. She reminds me of the hero. In the fact she searches up something, of course the benefit being she doesn't kill herself with her ultimate, assuming she hasn't taken damage. It's 2 creatures and also planeswalkers, and they don't go away in the turn, which is quite cool. But I don't think she will get to see play in Modern because obviously it doesn't have haste, that's the problem, and you still wouldn't get the cast trigger. But I do like her. I do like the idea of running her in standards and just having a deck with really expensive planeswalker creatures that you can look up with her. That's quite cool.
Yeah.
So she reminds me of Nahiri in that sense, in terms of mana and stuff.
I mean, she does make things unfair. If you're playing a nice sort of red-green aggressive deck, which there exists in Modern at the moment, I mean, this with Electrostatic Pummeler is quite interesting. And yeah, if you untap with it and you've got Ronus out, giving the Pummeler trample and double strike is basically going to win you the game. Pummeler
Ronus... She reminds me more of Tybalt, red and shit.
Yep, heard it here first. Samma is rubbish. Okay.
Samma the Tested. Samma not in my deck, she's not.
No. I can't imagine her breaking Standard anytime soon. It's probably a good thing. They broke Standard enough.
Ironically, she searches up Nicol Balas quite well.
Yeah. Busy,
that's
mate.
What she's looking for, isn't she?
Yeah.
I but you're not probably not on the same side.
Yeah, got a bone to pick with Bolas. And we have two Bolas Planeswalkers. One is in an intro deck, and I'm not going to read that one because it's not interesting. I don't like the intro deck stuff, unless either of you have read it and you know it's really good. But I don't think it is.
I think it's 8 mana, isn't it?
Yeah, it's irrelevant. And then you've got Nico Bolas, God Pharaoh. It's the actual Planeswalker mythic in the set. So it's 4 generic mana, and then Grixis colours, so 1 blue, 1 black, 1 red. So it's 7 mana, so not that much cheaper than the other one. It starts with 7 loyalties. It's got four abilities. The first one being +2, target opponent exiles cards from the top of his or her library until he or she exiles a non-land card. Until end of turn, you may cast that card without paying its mana cost, which is, that just feels like greatness. So you're never going to miss. It's not like reveal, oh, you hit a land, well done you.
It's really good, isn't it? It's really good.
That is insane. I mean, you might not hit a very good creature, but that's pretty good. As a +2, I mean, that's insane. I mean, you're going to get those games where you go, okay, +2, hit a Glorybringer, or keep talking about a Glorybringer, but, you know, that is pretty insane. And then the other +1 is each opponent exiles 2 cards from his or her hand, which is a nightmare. And then -4, which this one still makes me laugh, Nico Bolas deals 7 damage to target opponent or creature an opponent controls. Just like, what the hell?
I just like the idea of, like, oh, the opponent's on 6, land down the Nico Bolas, -4.
Yeah, it's like...
I saw someone was really upset with that, that it's -4 and doesn't kill creatures, it just deals 7 damage to them. Someone was really upset about it. I was like, well, it'll probably kill most creatures.
Can't you kill creature or do 7 damage to the opponent?
Exactly. Yeah. What should it say? Kill creature or opponent?
Destroy target plan.
Yeah, some people are never happy. -12, which this one makes me laugh because this one doesn't kill anyone. -12, exile each non-land permanent your opponent controls.
Technically, that doesn't win you the game, does it?
No, it doesn't. Let's not argue semantics. It's a pretty sweet ability, but no, it doesn't win you the game. But if you're thinking about it, I mean, at 7 mana, you're upticking this, or even downticking it to do 7 or whatever. You're probably just going to kill them before the -12 becomes relevant anyway, because, I mean, if you're exiling 2 cards a turn out of their hand or getting stuff for free off their library or 7-ing them, this is pretty sick. Good thing about Marvel, that's what I'm going to say, because Marveling that out would not be fun. There's definitely going to be a Grixis control deck between the Black Wrath, Locust God, Nico Bolas, God Pharaoh. There's a lot of cards there now to actually
make. Sweltering Suns. Yeah, I could see it being played. It'd be great in Command as well. People want to play it. It'd be a good card.
So that is it for Planeswalkers. Full art lands again. They all look very Bolas-y. Horns in all the artwork again. So if you are into your full art horny lands.
Horny Bolas.
Yeah, then you will not be disappointed. And also Invocations as well. So pokes a lot of fun at these the last time around. You've got the obvious ones that they're going to do, so like the gods, the different versions of the gods that they've got. But they've also reprinted some pretty tasty modern cards.
Yeah, they're nice.
I'm really pleased with these ones. I think I don't know why, they just seem a lot better than the last ones they've done.
To be fair, I really hate them, but I probably would play the Blood Moon just because the artwork's really nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think they've, considering what they did before, to then turn around and be like, oh, you've got these. I mean, you've got more legacy cards, so you've got Omniscience as well. The deck plays Omniscience. And you've also, just like Damnation. Like, I didn't expect them to reprint Damnation after having already reprinted it in Modern Masters.
Yeah, I'd say everyone's really excited about Damnation Blood Moon, but they're probably the two I'm most annoyed about.
Yeah.
Just that they have had recent reprints again, and we'll just back them in as a... it doesn't really matter too much because... know of the rarity of these invocations, but it's like, how long did we wait for a Damnation?
Years.
And they reprint it twice.
Choke as well.
Oh, I'm really annoyed about that. I'm annoyed with all of them. No, just simply because I found I had a nice set foil choke that I found in a box last week. Quite excited about, and now they've reprinted that. But no, they look a lot better. I think the choice is better as well.
Yeah.
We joked a lot about the Amonkhet ones, but I'll tell you, they've been selling a lot better than any of the other ones I've had.
Is it because they're cheaper, though?
I think that's a bit of a double-edged sword. A lot of people are more willing to sell them to me as well. people quite reluctant to sell me the masterpieces or the expeditions.
Mm-hmm.
These, yeah, so maybe, yeah, more have come in, hence why I've sold more. Yeah, a lot of people still like them.
I like the Thoughtseize one.
Yeah, Thoughtseize are nice.
But that's not about invocations. They're there. They're going to be easily searchable if you check out the spoilers from any good spoiler site. Short of going through all the cards that are there, because there's plenty of cards that are kind of obviously sort of limited to fodder and what have you, and not necessarily be overwhelmed. But are there any cards that are kind of like stand out for me? I'll kick off with one that I really like as well. Obviously, I mentioned I like the Black Wrath, which is pretty sweet. Whether or not it's going to be good or not, but one thing that is really interesting to me is the new demon, Razaketh the Foul-Blooded.
Yeah.
8 mana, 8/8 flying trampler. Pay 2 life, sacrifice another creature, search your library for a card, put that card into your hand, then shuffle your library. And I think this guy is another reason or another thing to think about playing a reanimated deck. And I've looked at, toyed around with lists that kind of have the sort of typical things you might see in a Delirium Shell, effectively putting stuff into the graveyard, and then Liliana Death's Majesty to recur them, and then Demon of Dark Schemes to use energy to recur creatures as well. I was kind of tinkering with the deck around that, and unfortunately Marvel was just better, so it never really went anywhere. And there was Soul Tie Marvel, which had a bit of a reanimation plan in the Pro Tour as well. So there's definitely scope for some sort of reanimated deck, and I reckon this guy could actually be part of what's really pushing that, because not only is it a flying 8/8 trampler, which is scary itself, but it kind of does everything you want it to. You sacrifice creatures to put them into the grave to then find key pieces of what you need to then keep that engine going, to then maybe recur them back and then do it again.
Story-wise as well, if those are interested, it's the third demon on Liliana's list that she eventually kills. So she's only got one demon left, and he almost kills Liliana, but the Gatewatch saves her and stuff. Also, he's the one that starts the whole Nicol Ballast coming to the plane. If they killed him before he turned the river red, then Nicol Ballast wouldn't have been able to turn up an Amonkhet, which is quite cool.
Oh, what a douchebag.
I know. But yeah, so he almost kills Liliana, and then... it's a bit weird. Spoilers for those reading the stories. Lily tries to kill him. He basically takes control of her because, like, contracts and stuff. Gabe saves her, and then she basically mind controls all of the zombie crocodiles in the river and basically eat him, and then Jace thinks it's disgusting and throws up.
That
is a bit weird.
Stupid Jace.
Yeah, I knew he'd have a weak stomach. What about you then, Grant? What have you got that's highlight for you?
The Pride Sovereign, big cat, some of the cats. So I won't pick him, but he's definitely going to be one of my favourites. I think it's basically, I really like just the value stuff. So there's the Ramanup Hydra, which is a 4-mana 3/3 Vigilance Reach Trample, all of the keywords. And then it gets +1/+1 if you've got a desert, and then an additional +1/+1 if you have a desert in the graveyard. So it's a bit like a Wild Nacatl in that sort of sense.
Mm.
So it's a bit also like the Something Wanderer, the one that was a 2/2, and it could be a 6/6 if you spent all colours on it.
Yeah.
That one, a bit like that. And I found him really cool. So it's either the Hydra, or I really like one of the new split cards that came out, which was the Appeal to Authority. So it was 1 green, so it's really cheap, so you can easily do both in one turn. Until end of turn, type creature gets trample and XX, where X is the number of creatures you control. And then Authority is tap up to 2 creatures the opponents control, and your creatures gain vigilance until end of turn. So you just have like green-white stuff, and it just seems super valuable and nice. I quite like it.
Hmm.
Oh, and one last one, because it's right next to it, I completely forgot about it. River Hoopo? I don't know how to
pronounce
it.
Hoopoo!
River Hoopoo. Amazing bird. Green blue, 1/3 flyer. That's already amazing. And then you can pay 5, you gain 2 life and draw a card. It's like the best bird ever. And it's multicolored, and it's just like not fussed about the river being all made out of blood. I want like all of these in foil, I think.
I don't know if it's actually going to do anything useful in limited, though. It's quite fast, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just I like having a flyer that can do stuff, as in either have high power or high toughness. Mm. And then just late game do like an amazing thing for control or whatever. So say you call someone, you know, not necessarily team of monsters, but some sort of team of, like, I don't know, late game ramp thing or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's good to have a mana sink, especially in sealed.
Exactly, yeah.
Simon, what about you?
It's going to have to be Heed the Eternal. 3 colourless, 2 red. He is a legendary zombie Minotaur warrior. Afflict 3. and at the beginning of your post-combat main phase, add one red to your mana pool for each one life your opponent has lost this turn. You're playing it in Commander, and that turn, my player's lost a total of 10 life. My opponent's lost a total of 10 life. I'd get 10 red mana in my second main phase.
Yes.
Yes.
That seems really good.
It's good.
I've got loads of ways of making them lose life without even having to attack. Don't know what I'm going to do with 10 red mana, because it was black.
Bane fire.
Fireball yeah. somewhere. Have you seen there's also a Sphinx Lord as well?
I really like him, because I already the 4 mana Sphinx with 4/4 flyer is already pretty good. But making that cost 2, that seems amazing.
So that should be quite fun. I'm not really too fussed about him, though, but what I was looking at was Dream Stealer. 2 colours, 1 black. Human wizard with menace. Whenever Dream Stealer deals combat damage to a player, that player discards that many cards. He's only a 1/2 though. However, he also has eternalize for 6. So if you hit him when he's a 4/4, they'd have to discard 4 cards.
Yep.
That's seems pretty nice. Good.
Practical menace is good. Just like skimming through.
I think the problem with him, I think if he was a 2/2 to start with, or maybe a 2 mana 1/2. He would have a better chance, but 3 mana 1/2, I don't seeing constructive play, unfortunately.
I think my favourite limited card in terms of just stuff is going to be everywhere and people are going to forget about is Proven Combatant, the 1/1/1 with no abilities apart from Eternalize for 6. You just play like a 1/1 and go like, oh yeah, blocks, dies, whatever, and people forget about it. And then it'd be like turn 10 in limited, you go, oh yeah, make this 4/4, like what? Got that.
Okay. Have you guys seen Torment of Hailfire?
Yes.
2 black and X. Repeat the following process X times. Each opponent loses 3 life unless that player sacrifices a non-land permanent or discards a card.
See, I really like the Everlasting Torment or whatever it was in Oath of the Gatewatch, which was they lose 5 life or sacrifice 2 creatures or a Planeswalker, I think it was.
Yeah.
I really liked it, but then apparently cards that give your opponents a choice are bad. So I really like this card, but
it is a bad. But you repeat that one you just mentioned. You get to do it twice, don't you?
Yeah. And this one, obviously, you get to do X times. Yeah. So that's super.
Yeah.
Cool.
Also, so yeah, it's bad if you give them a choice, but if you do it for X equals 6, you force it doesn't really matter.
I really like the artwork as well. I think it's probably my favourite artwork of any card in this set.
Mm. That's what I was mainly picking for the artwork and the flavour text.
I think it's the game day map, which kind of makes.
Oh, is it?
Just for that because it looks amazing.
I'm gonna have to put a standard deck together.
Yeah. Exactly. I'll tell you what. I mean. This is how to alienate everyone at Commander. Just like make infinite mana and just do that.
Another random one I wanted to talk about. Supreme Will. Again, not my style, but it's a 3 mana count. Well, a 3 mana mana leak, effectively. But you can either do that, or the choice is you look at the top 4 cards, put one in your hand and the rest in the bottom of your library.
Yes.
And I think that's the reason why I don't really like playing control. I don't like the idea where you have to hold spells in hand, and then you have to just, like, you know, oh, the opponent's not cast a spell yet, I'll just keep this in hand for whenever. If you want to, you know, win the game faster, I like this choice system where it could be a counter spell or a card advantage thing. That's really cool.
Yeah, I saw some people complain going, oh, we just want a mana leak, really. It's like, no. This is literally mana leak. Okay, it's one more extra mana, but the ability to dig 4 instead is huge.
Exactly.
It's really good, yeah, because usually with control, you've got the choice of what to do, but it's a choice spread across multiple cards in your hand that you've drawing extra cards throughout the game.
Like
if, but with this, having one card is awesome.
Yeah, if Mana Leak can get played for 2 mana, and Anticipate can get played for 2 mana, and this is one card better than Anticipate, I don't see at all why this can't be played.
Yeah. Awesome card. Actually, I say awesome, I'm going to hate it and hate everyone who plays it.
Yeah. It's like all the command cards.
I'm liking all of the dual 2 cards, like, you know, the Refuse to Cooperate and the Struggle to Survive, just for flavour purposes, really. My new favourite one is Farm to Market.
I've not heard of that one.
And the first bit is destroy target attacking or blocking creature. So you've killed the creature, and the market is you draw 2 cards and then discard 2 cards. So you've done a bit of exchange at the market with your dead animal. I just like it. I just think they're quite fun.
Oh, and finally, of course, God Pharaoh's Gift. We found out what he was going to search up, and I don't know about you guys, but I don't think it's worth it.
Which one was that?
Wait, what's this?
You know the Gates of the Afterlife? The one that searched up that card that
Yeah. It's that. Yeah, it's crap.
So, yeah, I'm a bit disappointed. Like, you know, I was thinking like a godsend kind of thing, where it was like a weapon or something that really changed the game, and this is just like a I don't know. You, like with, say, Godsend, the obviously the enchantment artifact or whatever it was from Theros, you'd play that by itself because it was 3 mana, but this you wouldn't want to play in your deck anyway, so I don't know.
It's trash.
Are you excited for Unraveling Mummy, Luke?
Yes, I am. Okay. That was going to be my next thing that I was going to bring up.
Sorry.
No. Obviously, going to be hopefully something to go into black-white zombies when all the zombies rotate out, basically. All the good ones that we've got, like Cryptbreaker and Diagraph Colossus. Obviously, it's not on the same power level as something like Diagraph Colossus. It's one colorless, one white, one black. The zombie is a 2/3 zombie. And for 2 mana, 1 generic, 1 white, you can give target attacking zombie lifelink until end of turn. And for 2 mana, one of it being black, you can give a target attacking zombie death touch until end of turn. So it's definitely got some interesting little combat tricks, making all your zombies undesirable to be blocked. Because a lot of the times I found playing black-white zombies, especially decks like green-black or what have you, you get these board stalls. So being able to say, okay, my Relentless Dead has got Death Touch and I'll swim with it late in the game. You actually got enough mana to go, right, it's got Death Touch and Lifelink. Do you want to block? So you can slowly just kind of chip through. And if they block, they lose their creature and you can just get Relentless Dead back. Or if they don't block, they start to slowly take away damage. So I think he is a bit of an inconspicuous little thing, because I don't think, you know, you look at a card like Diagraph Colossus or Cryptbreaker, you think obviously he's not on that same kind of power level, but I think he is actually quite underwhelmingly quite good.
Sideboard for creature matchups, or would you main deck him?
Depending on how the deck kind of shapes out, but at the moment, with a lack of Diagraph Colossus, you could easily fit him in there and replace that three drop slot. So I could imagine definitely testing out in the main deck to begin with. And at the very least, yeah, he could easily find himself in the sideboard. I think he's quite good. I think he just goes in there quite nicely. It does kind of make the deck a bit more kind of mid-range and a bit slower. But if that's how black-white kind of transforms, then that might just be the sort of deck it wants to be, sort of moving forward. Were there any other cards that either of you liked the look of?
I don't know if I like it. I guess we should mention it. Claim to Fame, causing quite a stir.
Oh, is this because of Death Shadow?
Yeah, so it's just the first part of the card, really. One black sorcery, return target creature card with converted mana cost 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield.
Claim's still pretty good on that, to be fair.
It's all right, yeah.
Well, you say if it's like, you know, turn 5 or 6, they've killed your Death Shadow, you could just get it back, make it attack on the same turn and give it a bit of a buff. That's probably enough to finish off the opponent if they've already used up all their kill spells.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just got nice synergies with it as well. They mill it away with something like Thought Scale. They at least got that mode on there as well, which is potentially quite nice. And if you cast Snapcaster Mage targeting this, can you choose the mode?
Oh, yeah, that's going to be my question. No, I think it has to be... Oh, actually, I don't know.
So it doesn't work with stuff that said, say, CMC 2 or less, because now, because of the new rules, this is the card CMC 3 unless it's on the stack. But yeah, no, this would work with Snapcaster Mage, yeah. I suppose it would have 2 flashback costs. One for
Wait, what's the wording on Snapcaster again?
Target tree in the graveyard gains flashback until end of turn. The flashback cost is equal to its mana cost. Either way, you definitely get to cast Flame. I don't know whether you have to pay red and one, or whether you have to pay red, one, and black.
So you can't cast Claim from the graveyard?
I think you can, but again, you'd have to pay CMC 3. Yeah. You'll have to wait till the FAQs, but I think that's because the CMC of the card is 3, as in black, red, and 1.
Yeah.
There must already be an FAQ for that, because it's from M&K.
Yes, I guess so. I'll just have to look it up. It's not normally come up yet with Snapcaster Mage. But yeah, I think my ruling at the moment, just based on how they look, would be you can cast either side, but it would be equal to 3, which is a bit weird. It wasn't before, but then obviously they changed the rulings of it because of the expertise nonsense.
Interesting. I don't know how much it will actually impact modern, but
technically we've still got Chandra and Jace on this plane. Oh, no, we've seen this. So theoretically, there should still be a Jace and a Chandra card for this set.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether, given their recent announcement, whether just because the planeswalkers are on the plane, they necessarily get a card, because Jace and Chandra haven't really done very much story-wise yet.
They're in the defeat cycle, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah. So they're obviously doing something where Nicol Bolas shows up. Yeah, so surely they should get a card. But normally they get spoiled quite early, so it's weird that we've started seeing like random uncommon cats and not the full planeswalkers, but I don't know.
Yeah, but haven't they been released... Weren't some of them spoiled a bit out of order?
Oh, yeah, maybe. I don't know. Hopefully we'll see them soon.
I'm going to say a card that I think is actually going to be quite impactful. And I'm not going to go with Bontu's Last Reckoning or Nico Ballas because I think they're fairly obvious. But one thing that I think is actually going to be potentially seeing play, not necessarily in Standard, but definitely in Constructed somewhere, is Torment of Hailfire. Because I look at that and it reminds me of Deathcloud, but a one-way Deathcloud. And
sure.
People have been trying to make Deathcloud a thing for a long time. And yeah. I reckon, this is my kind of like thing that I'm going to call now, that we're going to see Torment of Hailfire potentially in Modern in Constructed, because someone's going to want to try and like break that. That's my little thing that I'm calling now.
I saw a list for a Rakdos Burn deck the other day, you know, with like Bump in the Night and stuff.
Yep.
And I quite like the idea of having because obviously in Modern you either have generally like a couple of creatures, no creatures, or a lot of creatures. I quite like the idea of having this in like a black red burn deck where you just know the opponent's not going to have much to sacrifice, so you just do that and do a ton of damage.
Yeah.
So if you do it like, say if you've got like, you know, you're doing Rakdos Burn, you've done like a few Lava Spikes, you've done like Bump of the Night, they take like, I don't know, 9 damage or whatever. And then you do this, say, turn 4, and they just take like 6 damage, you'll do it even later on as they take more. That's pretty good. Particularly if you can make it cost less, obviously, with like Barrel or Goblin Electromancer or something, that's quite cool.
Oh, that'd be horrible.
Because like making it cost 1 less normally doesn't make that much of a deal for X cards.
Yeah.
But obviously, normally that's like 1 point of damage, not 3 or a permanent or a card.
Yeah. Or even just a ramp deck and just going, right, I'll pay X where X is a lot. And then now you take a lot of damage or lose everything.
It's annoying that it's non-land permanent. I know obviously it's less targeted, but I kind of want it to be land, just any permanent, because then obviously if they've got nothing left, they have to sacrifice their land, like Deathcloud.
Yeah.
You combine it with Pox and stuff anyways.
But yeah, but that means that they can sacrifice more permanents before taking damage.
Yeah, sure. It depends what you want to do, because like Deathcloud wasn't really to burn them out. It's mostly just to get rid of all their permanents, so I suppose it depends on which way you want to go with it. But yeah, it works either way, I guess.
I don't know if it will actually do anything, but I think that, you know, people are going to try it, and I wouldn't be surprised if you saw it, even if it's just kind of a fringe deck. I mean, it's obviously not a Deathcloud, and there are going to be games maybe where you go, ha ha, X is a lot, and they just go, okay, I'll just discard my whole hand. But I've still got all of this stuff on the table. Now what are you going to do? But yeah, that's my thing that I think is going to be something to look out for. Do any of you have any kind of cards that you think might be sleepers or impacting Standard in a big way?
I think I already said Focus God. I said I reckon he won't do much now, but I think when 4 toughness removal cycles out, I reckon he'll hype up. But that's just a prediction I think I've got.
Ronus's Last Stand. 2 green sorcery, create a 5/4 green snake creature token, land you control, don't untap during the next untapped step.
But I thought when, you know, you don't untap your lands, that was a bad thing, Simon.
It is a bad thing, but I'm thinking for 2 mana, 5/4 on turn 2.
If you had Anointed Procession, you'd get 2 of them. That's fine, but it costs 4, so I don't know. I like the idea of making lots of tokens.
Or, what was the other one I was looking at? Ramunet Excavator. 2 colourless, 1 green, you may play land cards from your graveyard.
Yeah, Crucible of Worlds on stick. I like
2/3. There's got to be something there. I don't know what it is yet, though. That's definitely one to look out for.
Yeah.
So, once again, we started with a nice plan this time for the going through the spoilers and ended up discussing almost every card.
Almost every card.
And some of them are cats.
Some of them are cats.
Again, being distracted at a tangent, I've just remembered that Doomfall exists, which is the 3 mana black sorcery. Choose 1. Target opponent exiles a creature he or she controls. Target opponent reveals his or her hand. You choose a non-land card from it, exile that card. So I really like that. It's an exiling edict effect.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Because normally you see like that sort of, that way of killing a thing, normally it's just a sacrifice effect. So it's just quite interesting that it's actually exile all this time rather than just them sacrificing the creature.
Yeah, it's nice.
Cool. So is there any more for any more?
I'm not going to mention any more cards.
Nope.
No more cards. Yeah, as we said, there's tons more that we haven't gone through. The site we use is Mythic Spoiler. I'll post a link down to that in the description below. Kind of keeps up with most of the stuff as it comes out. And they tend to only put stuff on there that is actually confirmed and is like official. So yeah, there you have it for the Hour of Devastation spoilers. That more or less wraps up episode 8 of our little show today. So thank you very much for listening. We can be found on Facebook if you search up Glimmer of Genius, and also the actual site for the podcast itself, it's glimmerofgenius.podbean.com. We're also on the MTG Cast Network as well, so if you listen to any podcasts on the MTG Cast Network, then we are also on there, and they've put us on iTunes on there as well. That's another way you can find us and listen to the podcast. If you've got any feedback for the show, anything you want to ask us or hear about in the upcoming shows, then find us on Facebook and leave a comment and let us know what you want to see in here. Like the page, let us know that you're listening, that you want to support the show, so that'd be really awesome.
There's a new card just been spoiled called Endless Sands.
Endless Sands.
Oh, we should get on it.
Do it.
It's a desert that taps for colourless. It's got 2, tap, exile target creature you control, and then 4, sacrifice it, bring all the creatures you exiled before.
Oh.
So it's like, is it Stasis Pod or whatever it's called?
Similar tactic.
So that's quite, I don't know if you'd actually do them, but that's an interesting land.
It's a rare.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it is for some reason.
But it does a rare thing, doesn't it?
That's, I think, I'm just trying to think what would play it. Obviously, I'm thinking of modern, like Eldrazi Tron could play that. And if they've got mana up and they're just sitting there and their stuff's getting killed, at least it's kind of a way to protect their stuff. I don't know if they want another card, which is Cold to Blood Moon, though.
Yeah. Carrion Bird. The Carrion Screecher. 4 mana, 3/1 flying. It's a zombie bird. Ooh.
Ooh.
He's a flying. Not for 4 mana. It's no. Interesting.
So that is all for now from us. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, give us some feedback on our Facebook page. I'll also be uploading all of the podcasts moving forward to my YouTube channel. So if you want to watch it there, then search up Vincent Games on YouTube. Not only will it have all the podcasts moving forward, but there's also plenty of other MTG content, so do check that out as well. Thanks very much for listening, and stay tuned for more.
Bye.
Oh, hi.
Bye-bye. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, cool. Yeah, for some reason, if I do something in Audacity, it then makes you unable to hear me. So I'm going to try and not do that thing. We should be good. Grant, say something quick.
Hello, this is Grant, and I am talking.
Excellent time.
How's your mum?